Well, good morning. Really glad to be here. Thankful that Kurt invited me out here. I was trying to decide if I should do a sermon, like I was called to do, or if I should just spend the time talking about childhood stories about Mason, so you can hold that against him when he comes. But I'm going to stick with the latter, of course. But no, you could turn to John chapter 4. We'll spend all of our time just in that text. John 4. A few years ago, I was reading a book by Andy Stanley called The Grace of God. Maybe you've seen it. But there was one question that he asks in this book that has stuck with me for a long time, that makes me think about what I'm doing, makes me question what I do. And we have smart people here, so I'm going to ask this question, see if you can answer it. The question was, how much sand would you have to consume in order to quench your thirst? Okay, let me ask that one more time. How much sand, would you have to drink in order to quench your thirst? That's, again, a silly question. I asked this question to some teenagers, and one kid quickly raised his hand and said, "You'd have to drink all of it." I'm like, maybe I shouldn't have asked this question. I'm going to have to do a topic on what actually quenches thirst. But what would happen if you drank sand? It's not really, I guess, possible because it's not liquid. But you would kill yourself. You wouldn't be quenching anything. You would dehydrate. You would die. Are you drinking sand? Don't ever drink sand, because it will never quench your thirst. Drink water. Drink living water. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11, it says, God has set eternity in our hearts. No matter what your background is, no matter what race you are, no matter what job you have, no matter what sin you've committed, you are longing for more. Every single one of us are thirsting for more. We're thirsty. How are you quenching your longing, your desire for more? Some people hand out sand. Some things that we come up with in our own minds feed us sand. But Jesus, we'll see in this chapter 4 of John, Jesus is offering something that actually satisfies that longing. And he says, I have living water. This passage, again, I think we know John 4, but it's a weird conversation. The way Jesus gets this woman to think about where she's at and what she needs and what he has, it's interesting. And so we're going to get into it. But I want us to be thinking, where are we trying to quench our thirst? With what are we trying to quench our thirst? So again, John 4, just the first six verses there, kind of gives us the background. Just a quick setting. It says that Jesus was going from Jerusalem to Galilee. And if you look at your maps, again, from Jerusalem to Galilee, going north, there's this region in between, and it was Samaria. And if you know a little bit about the history of Samaritans and Jews, did they get along? No, no, they hated each other. So if a Jew was going to Galilee, they would actually go around Samaria so that they wouldn't have to go through it and see those really bad Samaritans. You know, it was a racial battle. We're familiar with those kinds of things. They didn't want to do it. But it says in verse 4, Jesus had to pass through Samaria. Oh, okay. A Jew has to pass through Samaria. That's very uncommon. And this becomes, the rest of these passages explain why Jesus had to pass through. Why did Jesus have to pass through Samaria? Because he was being intentional about how he was going to reach out to someone. He was being intentional about his evangelism. He had to pass through to Samaria to talk to this woman. And then we get down to verse 7. And it says, it was a woman of Samaria. Ah, okay, this is 2,000 years ago. Again, we may not connect well with this, but in 2,000 years ago in that culture, you wouldn't see a man talking to a woman in public. You wouldn't see a rabbi talking, again, Jesus is a teacher. You wouldn't see rabbis talking to women. And you wouldn't see Jews talking to Samaritans. Something's weird here. Jesus is doing what he normally does, and that he's changing our stupid cultural things. And he's showing something different. I'm going to talk to this woman. I'm going to talk to a Samaritan because there's something way more important than my biases. There's something way more important than my comfort zone. I have to go through Samaria. Jesus had to go through Samaria. All right, so that's just a little bit of background. The whole scenario starts off weird. But let's get into the discourse between Jesus and the woman. So they're over at the well in verse 7. So Jesus is there. He's trying to get some water. And so he says to the woman, "Hey, give me a drink." And in verse 9, quickly says, "Wait, I'm a Jew. I'm a Samaritan, and you're a Jew. Why are you asking me for a drink? Why are we interacting? This is strange. This shouldn't be happening." Okay, so Jesus is there to get water. And then he says, "Give me a drink." But then what does Jesus say after that? "Oh, if you knew who I was, you'd be asking me for a drink. And then I would actually give you living water." Okay, what is going on? And the woman even has concern over this. In verse 11, the woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with. And the well is very deep. And where do you get this living water?" So Jesus is there to get water. He tells the woman, "If you knew who I was, you'd be asking me for water." The woman says, "Okay, this is confusing. You say you're here for water, but you don't have a pot. And then you say you have living water, fresh water. Why in the world are you even coming to the well to get water? If you have living water." This is strange. Why don't you just go home, get your living water, and you'll be super quenched, super satisfied. Why are we having this conversation? Why are they having this conversation? Oh yeah, because Jesus had to pass through Samaria. Jesus had to do this. Because there's a woman there who's hurting. Because there's a woman there who's thirsty. You can say, "Well, she's at the well. She shouldn't be thirsty. She even has a pot. Jesus didn't even bring a pot. She has a pot, so she could be quenched all she needs to be." So she's wondering, what is going on here? In verse 13, Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again." Again, there's a lot of spiritual implication, obviously, in this. Whether she was catching on to it or not, who knows? But he says, "I have water that is so living that not only will it quench you, but it will well up in you and it will be spewing out so that others can also be quenched." So first thought for us as Christians, is it welling up in us? Just a thought. But he goes on and he says, "I have this water that is to quench you. You will never be thirsty again." And the woman, does she say, "Oh, I'll pass on that. I'll just stick with this stagnant well that Jacob did, you know, so many thousands of years ago. Oh, man, so tasty, this stagnant water. I'll stick with that." No, she says, "Oh, I want that. Sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty again." Water. Is anybody thirsty yet? I should have brought water up with me. I don't know. Have you ever hiked in a desert? We went to the Grand Canyon a few years ago. And you either pack a whole bunch of water, or you definitely map out where all the springs are. But the scary thing is that you may end up coming to a spring and it's empty. Ugh, I ran out of water and now this spring is empty. So am I going to go ahead and dive into the sand and start, "Oh, yeah. Oh, this is quenching my thirst. Oh, the sand." No, no, no. Again, that's going to kill me. No, I'm going to go look for another spring. I'm going to go try to find fresh moving water. When you're in a desert, you're hot. You're drying out. It's not humid like here. You're drying out. And you're looking for that fresh water. I think we could all relate to that. A hot day. And you just need some cold, fresh water. And how wonderful it is when we finally get it. But what Jesus just did in these passages here is he established two things. He said, "I have living water." And he established that the woman is looking for living water. Okay? That's what he just did in this conversation. As bizarre as it is, Jesus is there to get water, but he doesn't have a pot. He has living water. And he's asking this woman to get water, but he says, "Hey, why don't you ask me for water?" Again, a really weird conversation. Put yourself in the woman's shoe of how this conversation is going. But guess what? It's about to get even more weird. Again, Jesus established, "I am living water." He established that she is wanting. In the next section, verse 16, Jesus is going to show and make her think how she is thirsty, how she is hurting, how she is looking. And Jesus may even come across as insensitive when you first read it. I always thought about if I used this tactic in real life, in something that I actually knew. But in verse 16, Jesus is going to bring out a crazy amount of emotion from this woman, just with one statement. "Go and get your husband. Go and get your husband." Why is that such a weird statement? Because what is going on in the woman's life? Where has she been feeding and quenching her thirst with? The woman answered him and said, "Oh, I don't have a husband." Okay, again, put yourself in this scenario. And Jesus says, "Oh, I know you don't have a husband. Actually, you've had five. And the one you have is actually not your husband. Yeah, I know. What? What? What kind of conversation is this? Why bring up all that confusion and pain? It doesn't tell us what happened with these relationships, whether they died or whether they left or what's going on. But man, in just a few sentences, a lot of pain, whatever reason it was there for, wherever they left, wherever they're not there, all this pain is brought out. Is this woman thirsty? Where has she been going to quench her thirst? Men. Is it working? Jesus said to her, "You are right in saying I have no husband, for you have had five, really six men in your life. I know you are thirsting for something that actually will satisfy." What are you drinking? Sand? Well, stop it, because it does nothing for you. Now, you could tell it's an awkward conversation. Like, there's this weird section here. Go get your husband. Oh, I know you can't because you've had five, and the one you're with is not actually your husband. And then, what does the woman do? In verse 19, the woman changes the topic. What did you? But she switches it to religion. Oh, wow. Talking about religion between a Jew and a Samaritan, that's the better option right now. Let's not talk about my relationships. Let's talk about how we know we don't get along. Let's talk about that. Because this, my past, my pain, my confusion, that just hurts. Have you ever had that conversation? Sit down with somebody that's obviously struggling. They don't really have the thirst quencher, Jesus, in their life, and they're trying to figure it out. It's a hard conversation to comfort somebody that doesn't have Jesus. Because that's where really the true comfort comes. Talking to somebody that's trying to get out of drug abuse. Trying to talk to somebody that is considering suicide. Trying to talk to somebody that's finding comfort in sex, whether you're a man or a woman. They're thirsting. And we have the answer. You have the answer to quench that. And sometimes we have to go where the pain is to show it. And that's what Jesus just did. He went where the pain is to show it. Again, Jesus established, "I am the living water." He established that she is thirsty. And he showed how she's been trying to satisfy that. And again, the woman tried to change the topic in verse 19. And the woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship." Just a quick, easy way to switch and transition into something else. Why do that when you know it's just going to be controversial? But Jesus engages. Jesus said to her, Our fathers worship on this mountain, verse 20, but you say that in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship. Jesus said to her, Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know. For salvation is from the Jews, but the hour is coming and is now here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit. Those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. The woman said to him, I know that the Messiah is coming. He was called the Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things. You remember how it started in 4, verse 4? Jesus had to pass through Samaria. Jesus had to be intentional about his actions to have this conversation. Jesus had to place himself at the well so he can satisfy a hurting woman's pain. Jesus had to pass through Samaria so that he can show that there's something better than sand. And that's living water, of course. Again, I start off with that illustration and we laugh. Or we say, what a silly question. But then we do it in real life. What is your sand? What are you drinking? Or are you fully satisfied with the living water? Jesus had to pass through Samaria to tell this woman in verse 25 or verse 26. I who speak am he. I am the Messiah. I am all that stuff I was talking about the living water, about eternal life. I'm that guy. What do you think the woman's feeling? Oh, okay, now I don't feel so mad that you brought up my whole past. That you brought out that pain. Because, you could actually do something about it. I who speak to you am he. I will quench your thirst. If you remember, in verse 14, it says, but whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. Does that happen for the woman? When she realizes, I have living water, I am speaking to the Messiah. Did she say, oh, let me just go back to the men. And just do it my way. What does he do? Or what does she do? She is welling up. Again, she went to the well to get water. And she runs off, forgets the pot. The pot is at the well. You go to the well to get water. And she leaves it there because she's welling up with actual living water. She wells up with the water, she wells up with this news, and she goes and tells other people. Come see a man who has told me everything. Come see a man who has given me living water. Come see a man who, even though I was confused and hurting and in my sin, has given me something that actually works. Quench my thirst. That is what welling up looks like. When it's coming out and being spread. In verse 39, Many Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me all that I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they asked him to stay with them, and he stayed there 2 days. And when many more believed because of his word, they said to the woman, "It is no longer because of what you said that we believe. So we have heard for ourselves, and we know that this is indeed the Savior of the world." Welling up. There's a song we used to sing. We went to a lot of different types of churches. It was, "Spring up, O well, and save my soul. Spring up, O well, and make me whole. Spring up, O well, and give to me that life abundantly." Are you convinced of that? That Jesus can truly satisfy your thirst? Are we really going to the well? Actually, sorry, not the well. Are we really going to the stream? The life-giving stream of living water for every need of ours. That's what he's offering. That's what he offers you. Whatever pain, whatever confusion, whatever sin, he says, "I will satisfy it. I am, he is, the thirst quencher." Be convinced of that. It's worked for many people in here. It's worked for this woman. It's worked for many people in the past, and it will continue to work because it's true. He is living water. So stop drinking sand and come to the stream. Thank you for your attention.